All right, everyone, on this Friday episode of Nothing Major, we will be talking all things Miami Open. But remember, it's mailbag day. We have so many great questions related to the Miami Open, and we have a lot of laughs. But first, we have a very special guest to join the show. Sam has no idea, but his wife, Abby, joins in. It is the 10-year anniversary of when Sam decided to slide into her DMs with an absolute just smooth message, I think. Nothing gets better than this. Luckily for Sam, it all worked out. And here we go. Let's get into the show.
Okay, everyone. Welcome to the Friday edition of Nothing Major. John Isner again, joined with Jack Sock, Stevie Johnson, and Sam Querrey. We're also joined with Charlie Fox, our executive producer at SIF Creative. And we are going to start the pod with a very special guest, and she just popped on. None other than Sam Querrey's significant other, best friend, and wife, Abby Querrey. Abby, thank you for joining Nothing Major.
You're
this
welcome.
Is very special. I have to admit that myself, Stevie, and Jack knew a little bit ahead of time that you were coming on. Sam did not, clearly.
No, you're just downstairs right now?
Yeah.
That's very
why
sneaky.
The kids are watching an iPad. I know.
Welcome to Nothing Major.
Kids are occupied, so all good.
Thank you.
What are we bringing her on for?
Is this like a special edition of Gossip Corner?
This is an archive edition of Gossip Corner for Sam. So Sam, do you know what yesterday was?
March 24th. Nope.
Yeah, it was our anniversary.
I thought our anniversary was in June.
But yesterday was the 10-year anniversary of you sliding into my DMs.
Okay.
And I sent Charlie the original picture, and I don't know if the three of you have seen it.
We have.
That Sam used. Do you remember the picture?
Yeah, fishing, or me holding a fish.
Can we read the DM from Sam?
Here we go. This is beautiful.
Yes. Oh, check this out.
March 24, 2015 said, "I just wanted to say hi and that you seem really cool. Hope you like the picture of me and the fish." Not my best line. He double hit her.
Really cool. Gosh,
hope you like the
so
picture
smooth.
Of me and the fish. Not my best line.
Well, it took me a while to respond because I opened it and then I was like, what do you do with this? Like, I didn't know what to say.
I mean, is this what Sam's doing to our guest? I'm sure this is why we're not landing anyone.
Do you send the fish picture to McConaughey?
You should send a picture of you smoking some on the green egg to McConaughey. That would be smart.
I should send the same thing to McConaughey.
It's almost like you could tell Sam wasn't like a smooth operator, right? Which is a good thing.
I think that's why I responded.
Yeah, no, it's very endearing. That is Sam. Like that message and that opening message to you and that picture is like quintessential Sam.
Yeah, I'm not like, hey, what's up, girl? How you doing? Like, I'm going to be in Miami Friday night.
That wouldn't have gone well. And I will say, when I met him in person 3 months after this, he was exactly the same as he was in these messages. So that was nice.
Exactly. Because that's him. Like,
that
that's real.
Yeah.
Very unsmooth. Very confusing.
We were like Shelton and Trini Rodman just 10 years prior.
Yeah. And it was funny because you brought that up and you were like, no, it's web flirting. Like, you didn't know what it was, but that's how.
Well, it's a little different now. I don't know why, but like they're.
Because there were no blue check marks back then. No one followed anyone. It was a different world.
Well, a 10-year anniversary.
Congratulations to you guys.
And Sam forgot it.
I didn't get you anything.
I know. We went to Costco, though, so it's fine.
I love how nervous Sam was getting when you asked him what the anniversary was for.
Well, because I thought he might have thought that it really was our wedding anniversary, and he forgot.
We had a babysitter last night, like, didn't have any plans, so we rolled around Costco at, like, 6 p.m. for, like, an hour and got paper towels.
Pretty good way to celebrate. You guys enjoy the rest of your episode, but
thank you, Abby.
All right,
thanks, Abby. I'll see you in a bit.
Bye.
All right, perfect. All right, it's some more Miami talk. We're going to talk a little bit about our experiences in Miami. We're going to do that first, and then after that, we're going to go over a lot of our mailbag questions that were submitted from our fans that we really, really appreciate. They were submitted on our website, nothingmajorshow.com, which is the best way to ask us questions if you want to do so. But let's talk first about our experiences in Miami. Off the top of my head, you three, I do not know what y'all's best ever result there. Maybe Jack, you made a semifinal there.
Quarter.
So would y'all say, and I'll start with you, Jack, because I don't think Stevie or Sam ever made a quarterfinal there. Did you enjoy playing in Miami, Jack? And apart from that one quarterfinal, how were your results other than that?
Very average, I would say. I feel like I was probably a second, third round guy most of the time. I always had a little bit of trouble going down there from the desert into those conditions, sweating as much as I do. And I felt like I did sometimes get a little gas there more than other places. But yeah, when it was on Key Biscayne, I absolutely loved it. I played at their Hard Rock, the new venue. I think I might've played there twice. But yeah, the old venue was awesome. Played Rafa in the quarters there when I lost. Obviously he had massive crowd support, but yeah, I liked the tournament, but never did like that great.
Yeah. I always stunk in Miami. I was decent in, at Crandon Park, but I think I won one match, at the Hard Rock Stadium. I don't know what it was. I just didn't like going there. I just was bad. All things considered, I was a terrible, terrible Miami Open player, but did all right in Key Biscayne a couple of years. I can't remember. I lost to Burdich one year either. It was like third. I think it was third round or fourth round. But yeah, it just wasn't my favorite event. I had a hard time transitioning from Indian Wells. I think I was always on such a high at Indian Wells. And then mentally, I was just in such a low place in Miami for some reason. So for me, it was just not my favorite tournament. And I did poorly there from 2012 to 2023 or 24, whatever the last year I played it.
Same with me. I feel like I always went into it with like a bad attitude.
Yeah. Yeah,
Stevie, you too. You know what I'm talking about.
I would literally ask to go play at like 11 in the morning so I can catch a night flight. That's how bad it was.
I wouldn't quite take it that far, but I did go in. I feel like I went from Indian Wells, best tournament, and like I just never went there with like a good mindset. Like it's just like, oh, I got to go to Miami. I stayed in a different hotel like every year. I never knew really where to stay. And if you don't go into a tournament with a good mindset, like you don't have a chance. You're already like handicapping yourself. I probably played Miami 16 or 17 times and never beat anyone in the top 50 ever. Like that is a terrible stat. And that is because I went into it with a bad attitude for 16 straight years.
But it is tricky though. You go to an event like that. Like I never got comfortable either. Like for the bulk of, I'm sure, assuming for all of our careers, like you would stay in the same place. Once you found a place you liked in a certain city, like you would stay there year in and year out because you were comfortable there. Like I probably stayed at like 8 different hotels in Miami. I just couldn't figure it out. Like I just never liked being there. I don't know if that was just a me thing or you guys thing, but
I feel like especially going from Palm Springs where we all were in houses in the most comfortable tournament and like the rental car, and then you go into the hectic like downtown Miami or near Brickell. And I feel like for a lot of those years, like when we were playing too, Ultra was going on at the same time or that music festival, and it was even more chaotic and it took forever to get over the bridge sometimes. Then you end up staying on, you know, on Key Biscayne, which made it better. But yeah, you go from like ultimate comfortability in Palm Springs to just chaos and motivation goes down.
Yeah. Well, Jack, Stevie and I, we were bad, but like John was good. Even outside of, I mean, you won it the one year, but even outside of winning it that year, you had a few other good runs. I feel like you did Airbnb a lot.
I did that twice. I did it once with you, Jack, remember, on the Key. That was fine. But some other people were staying there too, but I did it another time, like in Coconut Grove, and the house looked a lot better in the photos. It was one of those deals, you know, and it was kind of, rough part of the neighborhood. And we had these like feral cats that would hang out and in the house, and I'm like an animal lover. I would let them in the house. And it's like one of them had no hair, like no fur, had some like disease, and I would have him on the couch, would like snuggle with him on the couch. I made semifinals that year.
Why did you play well there in Miami, or how did you play well?
I don't know. I'm just like, I lived in Tampa, as y'all know, for so long, and I was used to playing in Florida. I guess I think that had something to do with it. I mean, most of the time I'm just driving down to Miami, so it didn't feel like a trip for me. Like I would fly out to Indian Wells, obviously. And as you guys mentioned, it's so, you know, peaceful and relaxing there. And then I'd get home to Tampa for like a couple days, reset, you know, repack my bags, which just kind of get me in a good mental spot. And I would get in my car and drive down there. So I never really felt like I was on the road in Miami. So I don't know. I really enjoyed playing there. I liked the conditions. I liked playing the heat and the humidity. I could just lollygag my way through a match. I could serve and look a lot more tired than I was on the court. And I had some good results. I won it once. After I won it, I made the finals in the first year at the Hard Rock. And a couple other times, I think I made a few semifinals as well. So mainly it was the courts plus the conditions. Those courts, as you guys know, when it was hot outside, they're really bouncy on the slower side. Again, I like playing in the humidity because I could you know, get through service games pretty easily and kind of conserve energy that way and just sort of hang dog and like obviously win some tiebreakers here and there. It's going to come down to a few points. So it's just a matter of getting hot at the right time. And I was able to do that a few times in Miami.
During that 2017 run, what, like at what point were you like, I can win this tournament?
2018.
Or sorry, 2018. So
I went, you know, you're good. And I went into that tournament, could not have been lower on confidence, but Jack and I won doubles at Indian Wells. So I started the year off, I was like one win and like six or seven losses, like really poorly. And I was going into Miami with not much confidence and I won and I had a bye and I won my first match in three sets, like gutted it out, like played ugly. After my round of 16 win, I think I beat Chilich and I played really, really well. Like best match I've played in years. And then I'm in the quarterfinals and I'm like, all right, I think I could be on to something. And sure enough, I played extremely well every single match after that. And
you beat Sasha in the finals?
Yeah. Sasha in the finals, I lost the first set. It was hot, really hot. It was like the hottest day of the tournament. I don't know. I just kind of stuck with it. You know, you're in the finals. You're just easy to stay mentally strong when you're in a final, right? And so I just kind of stuck with it. Maybe he got a little tight, missed some forehands he wouldn't normally miss, and was able to get a break in each of the second and third sets and served it out. So by far the biggest win of my career. So, but I do think winning doubles with Jack at Indian Wells was the sole reason I won Miami, because I did not have, you know, it is 10, 11 days of practice before my first match in Miami. I was in match mode the whole time in Indian Wells. Granted, it was doubles, right? So, but Jack and I are just practicing a little bit, playing doubles. And we did that every single day. So it wasn't 2.5, 3 hours of practice and kind of losing my mind that way. And I went to Miami and had 1 or 2 days of practice down there and started to get things rolling. But that's just how any sports is. Like anything, you can turn it around on the drop of a hat like that. And that's what happened with me. And huge win. It was the last ever Miami Open at Key Biscayne. So to be the last man standing in Key Biscayne, I think is pretty cool.
It's weird how in tennis or other all sports, like you're saying, you can like grind through your first match, grind through a second match, then all of a sudden play great in your third match and like everything clicks and you just play great from there on out. Like you said, on the drop of a dime or one match can just flip a switch and your game is different from one day to the next, which is kind of annoying in a sense, but it's also great too.
Yeah, but outside of like the big three, like, I feel like every one of us, if you go through any of our titles, there was always a match or two that, like, you shouldn't have won. You greased it out. You know, you had to get through some bit of adversity at some point to get – I mean, like, there was no way that you just started a tournament, you know, won, you know, if it was a draw of 32, 10 straight sets, and we're like, okay, like, you know, title. Like, that's just wasn't in the cards for 99% of the guys. I mean, really, like, outside of Roger, Rafa, Novak, like, that just doesn't happen.
I think the Hard Rock gets some unnecessary hate. People think it's cold. Maybe the outside courts are a little bit cold, but I quite like the center court. I like that the players have so much room there. You can obviously warm up, run around the stadium. I think the Hard Rock does a great job. Key Biscayne obviously is steeped in tradition, but as you know, it's just really cramped. I didn't really love the locker rooms there because I couldn't fit in them. Every doorway was like 6'3". The locker room ceiling was like 6'6", and I couldn't fit anywhere. So just more room for me at Hard Rock. So I was comfortable there. What do you guys think about the venues? Did you prefer it at Key Biscayne or Hard Rock? Just real quick.
Key Biscayne. I prefer venues that are tennis-specific venues. That's for all events around the world.
Yeah, Key Biscayne for sure.
Tennis portion, Key Biscayne for sure.
I would say Key Biscayne, but like just slightly. I thought the drive to the courts was therapeutic.
At Key Biscayne, I like the drive too.
So like, I don't know. It's just beautiful, as you know, right?
If it was a smooth trip, it was nice, but it also could be super stressful. It
could be sometimes. You're exactly right.
I think my greatest feat in Miami was doubles final with Nick Monroe. I will say that.
Wait, that's actually a hell of an effort. So the thing is great. You made semis Indian Wells, quarters of singles, and you made doubles finals with Nick, and then you flew to Australia for Davis Cup. Is it yes?
Well, yeah, I went semis Indian Wells singles. We won. No. Yeah, quarters Miami singles. Yeah, finals of doubles with Monroe and straight to Australia.
Jack and Stevie, Did you guys play at Crandon Park when they used to have the Monopoly money for the food?
Yeah. It was the worst.
You used to go in the lunchroom, they'd give you a packet of like 40 Monopoly dollars, and you go in and be like, it's 25, and everybody's standing, you rip it off a 10, then a 5, then like a 2, then the 50 cent thing. And
it was so annoying because you could only get one meal and then like a couple sides later in the day. Like you could not get two full meals. If you played, you know, pre-match meal, post-match meal, whatever, like you had to pull out the credit card or like go ask a buddy for like 3 extra Monopoly dollars to get in there. It was so annoying.
Yeah, because you never had your wallet with you in there.
No, like it was ridiculous.
Do you guys remember in Miami, everyone used to get a rental car and Verdasco always had like a lime green Ferrari?
I remember Marcelo Melo driving around a Porsche as well. Like
some of the players got the fancy rental cars. It was like the most Miami thing ever.
The year I won Miami, actually, I think I had just moved out of my home in Florida. So I didn't have my car down there. And Maca, David McPherson, my coach, had his car down in Florida. And it was the biggest piece of shit. We were going to the courts every day in like this 1993 like Mercedes that I couldn't fit in. Ended up winning the tournament. Every single year, like Verdasco and we're pulling into the thing, things like clunking along, yeah. And back is like no AC.
But for, I mean, a little bit of context for Macker there, he would also bring like a travel carry-on suitcase to like a 9-week Europe trip. Like he was not a man that like splurged on anything. Like it was like, bring two shirts, two shorts, and like, I'll just wash them every day. And like, we're good. Like he was a simple, simple man.
All right. Mailbag time. We had a lot of questions submitted. So we appreciate that. First one I see, the very first one I see is from username D's Nuts. What is going on with Big Foe? 2 outbursts within the year. Sam, what do you think's going on with Big Foe? Or is there anything going on? Or is he going to be fine?
I don't think anything like of serious concerns going on. He's just having a bit of a rough patch for a player of his caliber at the moment. You know, last summer he finaled Cincy and then semifinaled the US Open. So he had like kind of a good little pop there late in the summer and his bar was set really high and he just struggled to find that form again. And I think he, you know, as a top player, sometimes you like feel that pressure to put up the results over and over. And when you start the year off like he has, kind of losing early in a handful of tournaments, it starts to creep into your mind, like the doubt. The beauty with tennis is you get a fresh start with every tournament. At any moment here, he can go into a tournament and pop a final or win a tournament, even if that's a 250, and he's back. So, you know, he could go to Houston, final win it. He can go to Estoril, final win it. And I think Francis bounces back. He just needs to find that one week, that one little spark to get him going.
We have one here from Dom. This question is for Sam in Gossip Corner. Comparing the Indian Wells and Miami Masters, have you noticed the extra buzz and noise from the Miami Open fans given Miami is considered the fifth slam?
I'm glad you brought this up because take Joao Fonseca out this year. None of this happens. This is a one-off year. This is all because of Joao Fonseca. Without him, this tournament is not have this mania that it's going through right now. This is like a one-man issue and it's Joao Fonseca. So it's a pretty simple answer.
So what, John, do you think Miami Open, the buzz around it is just more than Indian Wells?
This year for sure it is.
This year for sure, but it's only because of Joao Fonseca. It's only because of Joao Fonseca.
I thought there was a significant lack of buzz at Indian Wells this year.
If there was a million Brazilians in Palm Springs, it would have the same buzz that Miami. It just happens to be because
That's what Miami brings. It's a multicultural place. So, I mean, you can't just say because I just think I think Monfils is electrifying the crowd. Chapo and Taylor Fritz had a massive crowd at their match.
Joao Fonseca is bringing other fans to other matches. This is like a one-man phenomenon.
We're going to find out in the next couple of days because he's no longer in the event. So we'll find out if the buzz is still there or if it's strictly a Fonseca thing.
I think it's still going to be there because I think people bought tickets with the opportunity to possibly watch him.
All right, we're moving on in the mailbag and we have a question from Grant from Pittsburgh. And this is an interesting question. It's a name that has not been brought up a lot in the last few years because he's been retired for some time. And it's Sam got smacked by Thomas Berdych in Miami 2 times in 2008 and 13, 6-1, 6-2, and 6-1, 6-1, respectively.
Wow.
John also lost to him in Miami in 2014, and Stevie lost to him in Miami 2016. Berdych is one guy whose career was totally overshadowed and limited by the big three. What was it like to play against him? How hard it was for us, in particular, to play against Thomas Berdych?
Burdich was so incredibly good. His ball striking was insane. He's got wins over all the, you know, Fed Nadal, Djokovic, you name it. And I'm not going to name names in the current generation, but Burdich ranked 6 or 7 for all those years is so much better than the guys ranked like 5 to 9 right now. Burdich was such an incredibly tough out. I feel like if I went on his Wikipedia right now, I feel like the guy quarterfinaled every slam and ever Masters series for like 10 straight years. He was so talented. Without the top three, I give Burdich like a handful of slams.
When you played him in like heavy conditions, good night. Because the guy could hit through a court and like didn't swing hard at all. He had smooth, controlled strokes.
I mean, he was a big guy.
Big guy, strong guy. He was a unit. And man, when he was on and just clocking the ball, just rough. Jack, did you ever play him?
Played him in the finals of Stockholm 1 year indoors. And I was playing phenomenal that week and just ran into an overshadowed Burdich and how good he was, especially indoors. And that guy's feeling the ball well when he was on, which was a lot of the time. He was a very consistent player too. Like Sam said, I wouldn't be surprised if he made the quarters of every slam for a lot of years, but he was a funky gripper, it looked like, and a very like different forehand swing. And if he caught the ball the right way, he hit the ball harder than anybody and cleaner than anybody. So
I remember playing him in the round of 32 at the French Open, and Joao on the team here at SIF just pulled this up for me because I couldn't remember the exact score. I knew I got absolutely destroyed. It was one of those freezing cold French Open days. You guys know what I'm talking about. And I played Burdich in the round of 32. He was the 15th seed. I was the 17th seed. Okay, like on paper, should be a close match. He beat me 2-2-1. I just remember it was so cold. I couldn't crack an egg out there. And the guy had the easiest power ever. I couldn't get free points to my serve.
It's got to be your worst loss of your career, right? Like score-wise.
I think it is. It's the worst. It's probably the worst loss of my career, for sure. 2-2-1.
He's got to be potentially like the best player to never win a slam. I think it's him, it's Sasha at the moment. Like given the era that Burdich was in, like it's tough to do.
Trivia for you guys. Hold on real quick. How many quarterfinals or better of Grand Slams did Burdich make?
Do you have that on hand?
I have 17 times he quarterfinaled or better.
Holy cow.
And that's a hand. That's, you know, 5 semifinals, a final, a bunch of quarter, like 17 quarterfinals or better in slams. 1 year in Australia, he went a consecutive quarterfinal, 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 semifinal, semifinal, quarterfinal.
Would y'all say, okay, we were talking about the best player never win a slam, him or David Ferrer? Who would you say is, if you had to choose one?
I'm going Burdich.
I'm taking Ferrer on clay, but like Burdich on grass and then hard.
Yeah, definitely grass.
But
yeah.
Overall, I'm just going Burdich because Burdich could get it on any surface. Ferrer wasn't going to get you on grass. How many quarterfinals or better at slams did David Ferrer have?
I'll say 12.
Ferrer had 17.
No. Oh, no way. That's a good question.
Also 5 semifinals and 1 final. They have the exact same amount of semifinals, quarterfinals, and finals at slams.
Can't even ask the question. They're equal level. Not one's better than the other.
I don't have the username in front of me, but if there's a current tournament that's not a Master Series, which current tournament that isn't a Master Series should be a Master Series?
Queens. Grass deserves a Master Series. Queens Club. I mean, obviously, the facility needs to get bigger, right? Like to host a 128 draw with buys, but still, like Queens Club deserves a Master Series, and the grass season deserves a Master Series. It's short. The guys who like to play on grass don't get rewarded with no Master Series. So I would like to see that one be a big one.
Jack, John, you guys feel the same? Is that the obvious answer?
Yeah, I'm trying to say, yeah, probably Queens.
I think if you deserve, yeah, probably Queens. But I think Dallas could be a Master
Series. Well, now, yeah. I mean, we haven't played the new venue.
No, just because partnerships matter. You know, you partner with the Dallas Cowboys. If anyone can support a Master Series event, it's a brand like that. So
I thought you were maybe going to say Rio, and that's not because of Joao Fonseca, like, but like there's no Master Series in South America. And like, they're, again, like John said this a couple weeks ago, like their fan base is like the most passionate in the world. But ultimately I kind of agree with Stevie. Queens probably is the one, like that's the closest to a Master Series right now. That's not a Master Series.
This is from Melinda Fadden. This is a pet peeve of mine. I literally hated this every single time you'd walk out to a court. The question is, why do tournaments have the players walk on court awkwardly holding a child's hand? It's so cringy. Do the players like doing that? Absolutely not. I hate it. I would like to walk side by side with them, fine, but I would also like to carry my own bag. I hate it when you put the bag on the kid's back that's like dragging on the ground. I don't know. It's just like a silly look to me. I don't like it. Like, I hated it. Like, I wish they would get rid of that. They can walk out there with you, but like, just walk side by side. Like, that's it. Like, don't feel obligated to hold the bag, hold the hand, do anything like that. It was not something I enjoyed doing.
I couldn't agree more. It's only tennis and, European football that do that. You know, like the football guys, they always hold hands.
Yeah, it's a bad look. It makes you look bad, even though the tournament's making you do it.
Yeah, I think the Europeans probably don't mind it because it's a football tradition. But us Americans, no way, man. Like, I want to carry my own bag. Like, you want to have something. You feel naked walking on the court with nothing.
Stockholm was the weirdest vibes for that, I feel like, too, because they would do that. It would be super dark in there, and the kid has this, like, thing. And then they do the smoke in your face as soon as you walk on the court. And, like, I feel like the kid was going to, like, stumble with the bag on. I'm like, this is a horrible look. All right, yeah.
All right, we have a question from Andre. And this just goes to show how far-reaching Nothing Major is.
Is this Andre Agassi?
Andre from Namibia.
Wow.
All the way from Africa. This is what Nothing Major does. We're a global pod. Everyone knows that. He has a great question too. And it's just interested. Here's his question. Just interested to know your thoughts on why Rafa never won Miami. Is it conditions? Are conditions not suitable for him? Or is it a bit unlucky given the few finals that he has played? Thanks for your show. And I'm watching from Namibia.
I don't know why we didn't know that. I think because you assume Rafa's won everything. And the fact that he hasn't won Miami, I've never thought about it. So I actually don't have a good answer off the top of my head.
Obviously it's tough. He's done very well at Indian Wells before. We know that. And so just the back-to-back nature of those two events is very hard on his body. And definitely towards the last 8 years of his career, hard courts really weren't his thing, or playing a lot of matches on hard courts weren't his thing. So a lot of the years he never played Miami. But he has made some finals there. I think he lost to Fed one time in a final. For me, the answer is just maybe a bit unlucky. I don't think it's conditions based. Like, he was like, the guy was like, there weren't any conditions that affected him. I just think a little unlucky. He's made some finals, lost against a better player on that day. And then after that, his body just really wouldn't quite cooperate on playing back-to-back hard court tournaments. So for me, that's the answer. Here's a question from Megan from Brooklyn. And she asks, who will be the next Sunshine Double winner, men's and women's? I can tell you the most recent Sunshine Double winner. Do you guys know?
Are you including doubles?
Yes.
Then no, I don't know.
No, that's ridiculous.
On the men's side, I don't think anyone will win the Sunshine Double in the next 20 years.
Not even Joao Fonseca?
I disagree. I think Alcaraz or Sinner will get it done eventually.
We've got an anonymous fan question here. If the Netflix cameras were rolling during your era, which Miami Open moment of yours would have made for the best drama for Breakpoint or Gossip Corner, something like that?
Isner and I, we and our coaches or slash teams shared an Airbnb on Key Biscayne. The one time we stayed together, and of course the doubles draw comes out and we're not playing together and we end up playing against each other.
Yes.
And
yes.
it was when Voshik and I were like hot and like playing really well. And we go and lose first round to Isner and Monroe. And then we were like back at the house together, like my blood's boiling that I just lost that doubles. And I like didn't even know how to like, and I think I might've like left that night. I think I'm out. It'd have been pretty funny if the cameras were following us around, like awkward silence. And
I just love the fact that the only time we ever played doubles against each other, Jack, which was once, I won. So I will always hold that over you. I probably winning in 2018. There could have been some good moments. But Stevie, you had a good moment on the back of a golf cart when I was walking. This is in the first year at Hard Rock, and I was seated. So I wasn't playing that day. Stevie was playing his first round match, and I was walking out to the practice courts, and I just checked the left.
I had an 11 a.m. match, by the way, against Joao.
Yeah, I was checking the live scores. You were playing Salsa from Portugal. And I saw that Stevie had lost. Like, you went down
3-2, probably comfortably, yeah.
And I'm walking with Mac, and I'm like, oh, man, Stevie just lost. I'm like, all right, well. And we're walking to the practice court, and sure enough, we see a golf cart coming our way with Stevie on the back of it. And we're like, I'm like, Mac, I hear Stevie kind of just get out of the way. He's probably really, really steamed. And as the golf cart passes us and we're walking by, Stevie sees us, and he goes to me and Mac, and he goes, to the airport. It was the funniest thing. It was like 12:15 p.m.
It was like the first day of the tournament. I was gone, dude.
Yeah. He goes, to the airport. And sure enough, you were on like a 2:30 flight, I guess.
Basically, yeah, I went right back. I asked the golf cart to just drive me to the hotel. I was like, don't even go to the locker room. I'll leave all my stuff here. Just get me to the hotel, throw some stuff in the bag, and just drive to the airport. I'll buy a flight on the way there. And I'm glad that John got to see it, because that I will always remember that. That's the only memory I have in Miami that's of any note. All right, everyone, that is a wrap for another episode of Nothing Major. Be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. There's a million others. Go follow us. And remember, our new website, nothingmajorshow.com. That is where all of the information, you can submit questions, etc. But we are going to end with roasting a fan, I believe. So that's going to be a new way to end the show this week. So let's get into it. Oh, not too bad.
Lazy feet. We got to get them feet.
A little stiff, I would say, yeah, but not like too bad.
Move your feet. Good forehand. He's trying to look cool. Look at him come to the net. Oh, crap, volley.
What do you mean? That was a buttery drop shot winner, but I like the forehands. Good setup, good turn. A little stiff, though. I would say just he's a little stiff out there today, but great backdrop. Got the beautiful trees in the background. It's a good place to play some tennis.
He's trying to just look so cool with the volley. I just move your feet.
Does look cool, though.
Stick the volley.
Oh, you never stuck. Yeah, you're right. He does look cool. Dude.
Does Luis have a better backhand volley than me, Stevie?
So far, yeah. I've seen one, and yes. All right, everyone. For all you audio listeners, that was an interesting way to end a podcast. You're not going to get that if you're listening to it, but head over to the YouTube page and watch Luis hit a couple good forehands and a sweet backhand volley. Just another great show. Enjoyed it, boys.